Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to IDVAC Blog Talk Radio, brought to you by the Institute on Domestic Violence in the African American Community, in collaboration with the Women of Color Network and the African American Domestic Peace Project. IDVAC Blog Talk Radio is made possible by a grant from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Administration for Children and Families, Family and Youth Services Bureau, and Family Violence Prevention and Services Program. Now, points of view expressed in this program do not necessarily represent the official positions or policies of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. IDVAC Blog Talk Radio brings you rich conversations and education on issues surrounding domestic violence in African American and African communities.
Hello, good evening. Tonight we have a guest, a host today. Her name is Connie. Connie, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. The floor is yours.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Good evening. I'm honored to be on the show tonight. And tonight I'm going to be talking about the sexual and reproductive health of African women, and based on the work that we do at the African Family Health Organization here in Philadelphia. And I picked this topic because I think that is relevant now, and I think that is something that we do not talk about enough in the community. And I think there's a gap in knowledge and services and awareness about sexual and reproductive health, which can lead to so many other issues among African women and girls. And in terms of the gap, I think in many traditional African societies, there were mothers and grandmothers and different female-centered societies that focused on helping girls move from being girls to women. And there was a lot of counseling that was done. There was a lot of teaching that was done about many things, some of those including sexual and reproductive health. But I think that now we don't have that, especially for immigrant women who live in America, African immigrant women. We lack that word system and that educational system of that was present in our home countries. And so now we have a lot of girls who are sort of finding their own way in terms of navigating their sexual and reproductive health, because the mothers are not talking to their daughters, because oftentimes the mothers don't really know that much either. And so what we're finding now is a lot of young girls who are getting infected with sexually transmitted diseases that they don't know about, they don't know how to treat, which can cause a lot of problems later on, including infertility. There's a lot of, I guess, sexual violence, again, because young girls are not aware of what is acceptable and what is not acceptable in a relationship. And then even in terms of their reproductive health, we've had a lot of couples come into our office at the African Family Health Organization, and in talking to the couples about their reproductive choices, we see sometimes the men tend to talk more so than the women, and the women seem to not even be aware of what their reproductive health is, what their choices are, and things like that. And so I think there's a lot of missing information that is not being spread to our girls and young. And so in our work, we try to do a lot of the education. We try to fill in that gap with what's missing. So we're educating women and girls about what their sexual health is, because oftentimes people assume sexual health is talking about intimacy between two people, when it's not that. It's caring for your body and knowing the signs to look for, and knowing the symptoms to look for, and knowing how to talk to your doctor, and knowing how to take care of yourself in a relationship. And reproductive health, we see women who are having children back to back, and oftentimes it's not because they want to, but because of what their partners are saying to them, or what society or family members are saying to them. And so even teaching or educating women about their reproductive choices that they have, and giving them options, because we have a family planning program at the African Family Health Organization. And when we surveyed about 80 or so women from maybe 14 different countries, 72 or 75% of them had no idea about what family planning was. And these were women between the ages of 18 to maybe 38 or 40. And many of them had no idea what family planning is and what that entails. And for many who had heard about family planning, they had negative connotations about it, feeling as if some higher power was trying to control the number of children that they could have, or trying to stop their procreation. And so, and not understanding that, understanding what family planning is can give them choices that they can make for themselves as women. And so I think, like, when we talk about sexual and reproductive health, a lot of the older women sort of shy away from that. But what they don't realize is that we need them to engage the younger women in these issues, because a lot of girls are going around with misinformation, because what they're learning from their friends or from the internet, and oftentimes that is misinformation, and so they're not getting what they need to make better choices. And so I think that at the African Family Health Organization, we're really striving to bring more awareness and education about some of these issues to the community, and sort of fill that missing gap between what people had in their home countries and what they have access to here. Because again, when we're talking about health in the U.S., and health messages are not sort of catered to different populations. So you might either have health messages that that sort of are mainstream or more traditional in the sense of the U.S., but it doesn't resonate with other immigrant populations. And so even within those immigrant populations, there are different kinds of immigrants or people coming from different countries. And so a lot of the health messages that are out there get missed by the community we serve, which are African and Caribbean immigrants. And so we have to make sure that even if we're trying to talk about these issues like sexual and reproductive health, we have to do it from a cultural lens so that people don't shy away from it, but that they embrace it. And so if we're talking to a group of older women about sexual and reproductive health, we have to make sure that we're catering the information or presenting the information in a way that they would want to engage in and create dialogue about. And so I think even when we talk about domestic violence, I think we always look at it through a lens from one perspective. And I think that if we really want to improve the health of different communities, that it's important that we delve deeper into the culture of these communities and what has worked, what has not worked, and talk to the people within these communities to see what, if they have solutions to these issues. And so it ranges from sexual reproductive health to domestic violence to chronic disease to all of these issues that are affecting community members. Because I think if we're not culturally sensitive, then most of the messages that we're trying to get across will not be understood or will not be accepted. And so I think that's a lot of what we try to do in our work. I'm sorry, hello?
Yes, I just wanted to if you could also introduce yourself for our guests and listeners who are listening to see who is Oni and where is she, and you know, that would be helpful. And then I have other questions for you.
Oh, okay. All right. So my name is Oni, and I am the director at the African Family Health Organization, which is here in Philadelphia. I'm originally from Liberia. I've lived in Philadelphia for a long time now, and I got into this work serving as a volunteer in the community, and wanting to get more involved in the work of impacting our community. And so I've gone from volunteer to different positions to now serving as a director. And at the African Family Health Organization, we provide a host of health and human services to the African and Caribbean immigrants and refugees that live in this greater Philadelphia area.
Great. So my question is, you mentioned the barrier that your clients have. I wanted to know the fact that they are not aware of reproductive health. Is it something, do you think it has something to do with being emotional restraint by, you know, intimate partner? Or do you think that they just don't know? Do you think it has to do with being a survivor of domestic violence?
I think that definitely is part of the problem, because I wouldn't say that all of our clients are have been victims of domestic violence, but there are definitely some, and those women in the situation do not have a voice. They are not able to say what they want in terms of their reproductive health. And I think I probably touched on that before, where sometimes we have couples that come into our office, and when we're doing reproductive counseling or family planning counseling, the man tends to speak more. And it's always, I think, for the counselors, they're taken aback because this is an issue that is affecting the woman. But yet and still, the man is the one who's answering all the questions about how many children they are going to have and why he doesn't believe in family planning. And, you know, and so we definitely, even if it's not at the level of domestic violence, there's still that sort of intimidation that's happening. Mm-hmm. And because these women feel so powerless, they're unable to stand up for themselves and say what they want. So in addition to them having little to no knowledge about what their reproductive health options are, sometimes they're caught in these relationships where they're in a sort of male-dominant relationship, where the male is sort of guiding or making most of the decisions, even around childbearing. Yeah.
Wow.
And then even in terms of using protection, and so using things like condoms and things like that, a lot of the younger women were finding it's becoming an issue where the males would tell them, the males are the ones making the decision for them. And so when we talk to a lot of the African girls, they always say that they're scared to suggest using protection because they don't want the males to think negatively of them, or they don't want them to not want to be with them. And so I feel like we need to do a lot more empowerment of the women, because yeah. So even if it hasn't escalated to domestic violence, it sort of is always on the. It's like it could happen because there's so much intimidation going on anyway.
Oh, wow. And also, do you think the fact that many African women are not seeking service, do you think it's related to language barrier? Because I think you said you work with people from 14 different countries. And what are those countries, if you could list them?
So I definitely think language is an issue, and it's more than 14 countries. I think those 14 countries were just the countries that the women who participated in that survey. But in general, our clients come from way more than 14 countries. But just for that survey, if I remember off the top of my head, it was Guinea, Mali, Senegal, Liberia, Sierra Leone, Kenya, Sudan, Niger, Benin, Togo, the Congo, Burundi. Those are the ones I remember off the top of my head. Those were the women who participated in that survey.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then those, yes. So I think even in general, in terms of the population that we serve, is mostly West African. Most of our clients are West African. And again, I think it's because of the language barrier. And so a lot of them, a lot of people access our services who are West African, and I think it's due to the language barrier for them.
And you're able to serve them in their language.
Yeah, so with among the staff, there's about 60 languages that are spoken. So in addition to like French and so French, English, Creole, like Haitian Creole and Swahili. In addition to those ones, there's also like all of the other African languages that are spoken.
Wow, fantastic.
So language is I think language is definitely a barrier to getting care because, again, most of the information out there is in English. So if you don't speak it, then it becomes a problem. And so a lot of our clients' problem, and it prevents them from getting the services that they need.
Wow, fantastic. Yeah. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. I'll let you continue.
So those were your two questions.
Yes, for now.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, so just even going back to the whole issue about you just asked a question about the male dominance. So even going back to male dominance in this with the relationships that we're seeing with the women that are coming in and how that can affect the sexual health of women. So when we are doing things like HIV testing or hepatitis B testing, we're seeing a lot of positive numbers with these tests that we're doing. And the thing is, in the U.S., if you think about the U.S., there's been a lot of HIV prevention work that is going on. And so it makes one ask the question, how come our community is being missed out with these messages? Are we not doing enough to reach people? But then again, it goes back to the same question of who's making the decisions in these relationships in terms of sexual health. And unfortunately, for the most part, it's the men. And so if a man feels like he doesn't need to use protection, I'll give you an example. We work with one of our clients. She's HIV positive. And even with her being the one that is HIV positive, she's still unable to make good decisions regarding keeping herself and other people safe. And one time she said to me, Oni, I don't know what to do because I know I have this disease. And sometimes I don't want to disclose this to everybody because I don't want everybody talking about me. She said, but the men that she sees or the man that she was seeing, she was trying to sort of prevent him from getting infected, and she was trying to insist on them using protection, and he was insisting on not using protection because he didn't feel like she looked like anybody that was sick or, you know, and so, yeah, and so he sort of was the one making that decision. So here we have a situation where there's a woman who knows that she has this disease and she's trying to prevent a man from getting it, and he's insisting. And because she doesn't have she doesn't feel like she has a voice, so then she's unable to force him to use protection. Mm-hmm. And so it really put, and so for me, when she told me that story, I was flabbergasted because I'm like, so what happens to the women and the girls who don't even have this disease and who just want to protect themselves from getting it? If they don't have, you know, if they don't have a voice to speak up and say what they want. And so I think in many African societies and among many of the women and men that we work with, the power balance is there's no power balance. And women still don't have a voice and they still are not able to make decisions about their own health. And that's putting them in a very tricky situation because if you cannot make good decisions about your own health, then that is a problem. And that can lead to so many other issues down the line. And so I think even looking at domestic violence and what that entails and sexual violence, because sexual violence doesn't only happen to people who don't know with strangers. It happens within marriages. It happens within relationships. You know, and this is something we don't talk about, because even we had a women's group one time, and one of the women was talking about sexual violence within her marriage, and the other women started to laugh at her. And when we asked them why they were laughing, they said, because that's not possible. You cannot, your partner, your husband cannot rape you. If you're married, then that is your duty and it's not possible. And so this, and again, I'm like, where are we getting these messages from? And obviously we're passing these messages down to our daughters and our nieces and our because if women think that way, that there's no way that your husband can rape you because it's your duty as a wife, then that speaks a lot. And that just shows you that sometimes we might not even understand what violence really is. Mm-hmm. And that, again, can impact our health in so many different ways. And so when you have a group of women who are telling another woman that, you know,
your husband can't rape you.
No.
That's your duty.
Yeah, that's your duty. That's your duty. You know, and so what are we teaching our daughters? Are we teaching our daughters the same thing? Are we teaching them that, no, you know, you have the right to say no, even if it's your husband, you have the right to say no to your husband. Because then we're not raising girls who will use their voice to protect themselves from not just violence, but from being infected with sexually transmitted diseases and other things like that, you know. And so, and because even when we look at the number of women in our program, you know, in our like our HIV, we have more women. And I'm like, where are the men? Obviously, there takes two to make these things happen. So we just have all these women in the program, and there are no men. So where are the men?
Wow.
So it's just...
How are you able to outreach? This topic is so sensitive, and we know there is a lot of taboo in our community. How are you able to reach out to the community and, you know, have all your groups and women come in? What's your strategy? How do you do?
Yeah, and that's exactly what I was saying before about how when we're doing these things, we have to be culturally sensitive, and we cannot use, because even with our sexual health work and reproductive health work, you know, sometimes when you get funding to do a program, the funders sort of want you to follow their guidelines and their curriculum and everything else. And I've had to say to many funders that I'm appreciative of the funding you're giving us to do this work, but we really have to adjust the curriculum. We have to adjust your model because it will not work in our community. You know, and so sometimes we run after funding and we forget to be responsive to the needs of our community. And so for all of our programs, we have to look at it from a cultural lens and think about what will work and what will not work. So the first thing was that when we're talking about sexual and reproductive health, if we're doing counseling with couples, then we might do it with the both of them. But when we're doing education in the community, for instance, when we're doing workshops in the community, we've found out that we have to separate the men from the women. If we want the women to talk and we want them to ask questions and to really understand the message that we're giving them, we found that we had to separate the men from the women, because we used to do it before where we had them both together in the same room when we're doing our education work. And we found that the women were not talking. The men were the ones asking questions and talking. And as soon as we separated them, the women started talking. So that was the first thing that we did. Yeah, they started asking questions. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, the questions that come up when we do this work, it's amazing. And it shows me that there's a lot of work that needs to continuously be done. Because there's so much misinformation out there. There's so many myths and superstition that is out there about who can get infected and who cannot get infected and who, you know, about sexual health and all of that. And so, like, our work is just there to present the facts. And again, too, I think that when we're doing these groups in the community and doing outreach, we always call our groups like Women Talk or Sister Talk or something like that, making it very informal. We make it very informal. And what we do is we target like community leaders. So, you know, in all of the African communities, there are some women who just know how to get other women together. They know how to get them talking. And so we try to target those women leaders and get them on board with what we're doing, and then they help us. They're sort of our gateway into the different communities. Because I am Liberian, but it doesn't mean that I'm able to talk to all Liberian women about this issue. I might have my network of women that I can bring it up to, but somebody else might have another network of women. And one message that works with women that might be in my network might not work with women in your network or somebody else's network. So we have to be open to change and be open to being flexible about our message that we're sending out, and just being present and sort of letting the women rule the conversation. Because we've had several instances where we call them house parties, where we go to somebody's home, we provide refreshments, and then we just start talking. We start having conversations about these issues. And the women, they want to talk about this. They have questions. They want information.
Wow.
Yeah, and so I think the informal route of doing these home parties with the women and just starting conversations about different things has been very, very, very eye-opening. One time we did a session at her home, and this woman, she was, I think she might have been in her early 70s or late 60s. And after the workshop, she came up to us and she said, you know, and I was so shocked because, you know, like older African women, they don't talk about these things at all.
Right.
And so for her to be 70 years old and she came up to us after the thing and she was like, you know, and the way she said it, she wasn't very like... I'm trying to remember the exact thing she said, but basically she was saying to us that she's still sexually active, but that she experiences a lot of pain. But she has never talked about that, right? But because she came to this event that we were having, and because she was present and she heard the conversations, she was able to come up to us and say, you know, yes, I'm still, even though I'm this age, I'm still active, but it's very painful for me, but I'm unable to tell my partner that it's painful for me. And so she's been sitting there all this time, bearing this pain.
Oh, my goodness.
Because she didn't feel like she should say that to her partner. Like, that is not what a woman does, right? And she just assumed, again, going back to the misinformation and the lack of facts, she assumed that because of her age, that is why that was happening.
And also, there is, she wasn't aware of any cultural place that she could go and speak safely. And she felt safe with you.
Exactly. And even if she had a doctor, maybe she never even disclosed that to her doctor because she was probably embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
She was probably embarrassed to disclose that to her doctor. And so to just think that there might be so many women out there, you know, not knowing this information,
not
knowing that they can get...
So culturally, sensitivity is really needed. You know,
There's a lot that is needed. A lot. We have so much work to do. Because, you know, like I was saying in the introduction, Fatima, that in many African countries, you know, when growing up, there was always like some society that girls could go to or some elders that, not recently, but back in the day, where they learned about being a woman and what it meant, like transitioning to womanhood. But we don't have that anymore. And so most girls and women are sort of learning on their own.
Right.
And because they're in these relationships where there's not a good power balance, they don't speak up when something is wrong.
Right. So that leads me to another question. Do you think survivors of female genital mutilation are more exposed to sexual and reproductive issues than those who are not?
Well, I definitely think yes, in both cases. I know that some of the women that we have worked with who have been victims of that, definitely their sexual health has been compromised. And they're unable to, their sexual health whole experience has been difficult for the most part. And again, because it's not something that women talk about. And so we had another group. We did another group at somebody else's house where that was the topic. And again, there was so much information that came out. There were so many women who talked about how they, like sex has never been something that they have enjoyed. It's always been something that was painful, but it's always been something that they felt they had to do.
Mutilation.
Yes. And so for them, it's just been sort of something that they're supposed to do as women, but not something that they enjoy, but just something that they're supposed to do. And so for them, it's just something routine.
Yes. So this is not only sexual and reproductive issue, but it's emotional as well, right? How psychological.
Yes.
So what kind definitely. Of help do you think can be provided for these women who have been experiencing, it's like marital rape, if they are not enjoying it, and if they are in pain, it looks like it's a rape. But it's the lawful marriage, husbands. So what kind of help do you think could be useful for them? What kind of help do you think they may need to overcome this issue, this challenge?
Yeah, it's such a difficult question. And the thing is, I think the first thing is that women in that situation, one, they first have to understand that that is not normal. And that's sometimes the most difficult thing to get across to women, because, you know, when you're taught to behave a certain way, or when you're taught to be a dutiful wife, or when you're taught to respond to your husband's needs, it's very difficult for you to think that what you're going through is not normal. And when you've not been told that there is another way, or that there's another experience, then you don't think that what you're going through is something that is not right. So the first thing is for them to understand that what they're going through is not normal. And then the second thing is, I really think these women, like getting women together to talk about these issues, is so important, because I know that as we've done this work, the women who are talking to each other and who are talking to us, like, I think that's the first step. Well, that's the second step. One, for them to understand that what they're going through is not normal. Like, you know, marital rape is not normal. Pain, excessive pain is not normal. So thinking that is not normal. And then two, having an outlet to talk about that. Because, you know, these things, when people are physically harmed and emotionally harmed, it's not a quick fix. And so you have to start slow. They have to open up about what they're going through, and you have to start a dialogue. You have to get other women to talk about their experiences, because it's not easy. It's not easy to fix that. That's a difficult situation to fix. It takes time. And thing is, for many of the men in our community, this macho behavior, this know-all behavior is, and many of them feel like we're sort of spoiling their women. Right, because now we're opening the eyes of the women, and telling them. We've had a lot of men call our office, like, or come and complain about their wives or their partners coming to some of our events, and then they're coming home and things are changing, or, you know. And so I think we just have to want to empower our women. We have to empower our women to understand what is really going on in their lives, with their bodies. And so, and I think once they're empowered, then they're able to make those little changes that they need to make. Even if it's a change that doesn't have to involve their partner, but they have to be brave enough to do that.
Right.
But none of that can start without dialogue.
Yes, right. Mm-hmm. I mean, do you have men allies who are helping you to address the issues, other men?
I mean, we have some male allies, but again, like, if we're talking about something else, it seems as if, like, African men just don't want to talk about sexual health. Like, maybe even reproductive health, they will talk about it, but they act as if sexual health is this taboo subject that nobody wants to address, or that they don't feel like they should be talking about. Like, that's a woman's issue. So they call it a woman's issue. But yet, so they are a big part of that issue.
Yes. They have a huge impact.
They're the main problem. They are the main problem, you know. And unfortunately, I mean, things are changing. You know, I see things changing with the younger generation. I think they're more exposed. Two, mm-hmm. they have access to more information. Three, they're educated in a different environment, not just education school-wise, but culturally they're being educated mm-hmm. in a different environment. And so you see younger people who see this in a different way. But for older people who are more set in their ways, it's not easy. It's not easy. And to find male allies who are willing to talk about this particular issue with other males, mm-hmm. it's definitely not easy.
Yes, yes.
Because they don't want to be seen as weak, or, you know, and this is such a sensitive topic. Like, how do they even start that topic with other men?
Mm.
Yeah.
I see.
It's really a difficult topic. And even in terms of reproductive health and women having the choice to decide for themselves, and, you know, that too is difficult.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very hard. Because if you're in a marriage and you're expected to have children, it's not all women that want to have children back to back, but if you know how in-laws, like the partner's family, can also be involved,
and right?
They can increase the pressure on the woman and all of that. And so because we had a woman who she was about 33 years old, and she already had 6 children, mm-hmm. and she had had them back to back to back to back to back. And so when she came into the office and she was pregnant again. And I was like, you know, like, is this really, I mean, if you want to have all these children, then that's great. I said, but are you okay with this? And she wasn't. And, you know, and she broke down and she was crying, and she said she really did not want, but her husband kept insisting that she has more children. And that if he didn't, and the thing is, he was threatening her and saying that if she didn't have all those children, that he was going to find another wife so that she could give him additional children. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's heartbreaking.
And so when we talk about the intimidation that's happening, that's some of the intimidation that's happening, where these women are being intimidated into making choices that they don't want to make, but choices that impact their bodies. And the thing is, it's not all gloom and doom, you know, because, again, I don't want to paint a picture that all African people act the same way and all, you know, it's not that at all. We do have some very positive relationships. And we have women who are in unhealthy and happy relationships, who are sexually healthy. And so, you know, I don't want to ever paint a picture of, because, you know, it's easy for people to put us into a box and say, oh, those Africans, there go those Africans again, because that is not the case.
Yeah, it's not. Right now we're talking about a minority who have problems that need attention. and that we want those minorities who have problems to know that their life matters. Even if
that's
it's
right.
one African woman, her life matters. And we
that's
need
right.
to say what is not okay in our culture and
yeah.
our community to make sure she's
yeah.
safe. So even if
that's
it's
right.
one person, we're going to point out what is not okay so that
That's
you make
right.
sure she gets the help she needs. So domestic
Absolutely.
Violence happens in every other cultures, but, you know, being able to address it shows to the survivors and victims who are in the situation, shows to them
mm-hmm.
that they are not ignored. They, what they're going through is known and will be addressed.
Absolutely.
So, mm-hmm. yes.
No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And that's why it's so important to get this information out there. And that's why we do the work that we do, because we know that there are women who might be going through this and who never knew that there was a place they could go and get help, or who didn't know that they could talk to other people. Because, you know, sometimes when you're going through something, you feel
mm-hmm.
alone. You think you're the
yes.
only person that's experiencing this and it's only happening
right.
to you. And so you don't
that's
talk
right.
about it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We don't.
That's right.
You know how in our societies we're very secretive.
mm-hmm. Yeah.
We are very
dirty,
secretive
lovely.
And we. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
We're very
you don't
secretive
air it.
And we. We don't air none of the dirty laundry. Everybody acts as if everything is okay.
Okay.
And so, like you said, just us talking about this can help one woman to understand that I'm not alone. This is happening to
mm-hmm.
me too. And so then how can we support each other? How can we learn from each other? Because that's the biggest thing, you know. I might know something that you might not know. You might know something that I don't know. Or we might be going through the same thing. But until we talk to each other, we will never
mm-hmm.
know that.
That's right. Okay.
And
you
might
then,
have a solution that would work.
Exactly, exactly.
Mm.
So there are some other cultural practices in other community, and I think maybe in our community, in African immigrant community as well, which is forced and or arranged marriage or coerced marriage. Do you think
mm-hmm.
we have some in our community? And I personally think that victims of forced marriage or arranged marriage might be going through sexual and reproductive health issues. So what do you think?
Oh, I definitely agree with that. I definitely
mm-hmm.
agree with that. Because the thing is, in those situations, we also see heightened, like higher levels of domestic violence too, of physical violence.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had I know so many situations where that has happened, and those women are most definitely at risk of not being able to control their reproductive health. Because
mm-hmm.
if you are, and the thing in most of the African countries is that in most of those forced marriages or arranged marriages, the women or girls were married
mm-hmm.
off to people way older than them. And
mm-hmm.
so when you're married off to somebody who is much older than you, that just almost puts your ability to have power in that relationship at zero.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you are 18 years old or 19 or even 20, and you're getting married to somebody who's like double your age, right then you've lost all power in that situation.
Right.
And so we've definitely seen increased levels of I guess sexual unhappiness and reproductive choices that are not left up to the woman. Because these and then a lot of physical violence as well. So it definitely is an issue in that case. So you see, there's so many layers to this thing in our communities, and like you said, if we don't keep talking about this, it's not
mm-hmm.
going to help us and the girls that are coming after us.
Right, we have to unpack it.
Yeah, we really do. We really do.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the funny thing is, I hear this a lot, where a lot of people say, "Oh, you don't marry for love. You marry for family."
Something.
And you Oh. You marry for family and you marry for convenience. And so when you do that, what does that really mean? What does that mean for that woman? And you know, the thing is, for most of the arranged marriages is done based on family connections. Yeah.
Wow.
And it's not about love, and you know, and all those things that women might want. you know, but it's more based on convenience.
We only have 15 minutes left, so I'm going to let you talk about your programs and what the different services you provide, and how can women come to the service, what do they need to do if they need to contact you, and if they need counseling. So if you could tell that to our listener.
Yeah, so I can't believe it's been almost this long that we've been talking.
Yeah.
But so
an interesting topic.
Oh my, this is such an interesting topic for me, and I wish we could do like these girl and women house parties like all over the city with all of our women, and just to get us talking to each other about these issues, because that's how the healing can start, by talking.
Right.
So the African Family Health Organization, as I was saying, we do a lot of health and human services for African and Caribbean, and most of our Caribbean clients are Haitian, the immigrant and refugee community. And so some of our health programs include HIV prevention, awareness, and testing, because the goal of that program is to let everybody know what their status is. In addition to that, we want to try to decrease the stigma around this disease so that people who even have it feel comfortable disclosing it. You know, because we're such a hush-hush society that people don't talk about things that they have because everybody else makes them feel terrible.
Bad.
So in our, yes, you know, and so, yeah, family members who will shun other family members. And I'm like, don't look at people who might be infected by this as bad people. They might have just been with somebody that they were not aware of. And because, again, we're disempowered as women for the most part, being unable to ensure that you're protected puts you at risk, you know? And so you have girls who get married, they might be virgins, and boom, they have HIV because their husband had it and he never told her. So we have to decrease the stigma around all of these issues, whether it's domestic violence, whether it's FGM, whether it's HIV. We need to remove all of the stigma so that we can talk about these things, that people can be comfortable telling us what is going on. Because, you know, I have so many stories. I need to stop with the story. So I have another client. The husband was living here. He's been living here for maybe 12 years. And again, it was an arranged marriage situation. So his family found a girl in his country. They did the traditional marriage, and they sent her over here. This man has been living with HIV for the last 7 years.
Oh.
He never told his family or her family. So they sent this woman over here. He never told her anything. She is now 4 months pregnant, and she's infected with HIV. And she's still unbelievable. It is unbelievable. And these are some of the things that are happening that, you know, it just blows my mind. It blows my mind. So,
shocking.
Yeah. And so that woman coming here in an arranged marriage situation, she can't say to him, oh, you know, I need to, she's not going to say that they need to use the protection. She just got married.
Mm-hmm.
So what situation are we putting her in?
And she wasn't taught to ask to request that from her husband.
Exactly.
Testing.
Never, never. And this is why when we do work with young girls, we're talking to teenagers now and girls in their early 20s. I always say to them, you know, if you're going to go on a date with a guy, your first date should be to the clinic. You need to both go and get tested, especially if there's somebody that you might think you want to become sexually active with. You need to be having those conversations with your partners. And we have to start empowering our girls to talk about these issues, because obviously we're not doing that. And so when she came here, it wouldn't even cross her mind to ask him even questions about his past. So we know we want to remove the stigma around these issues so that people feel more comfortable disclosing their status. That's our HIV prevention work. And then we do the same thing around hepatitis B, because again, Africans and Asians are most at risk for hepatitis B, but we don't screen for it. We don't know we have it. We don't know if anybody else around us has it. And so we had two West Africans, I don't know what country, but they both passed away last year from liver cancer because they both had hepatitis B and they never knew it. And so by the time they got to our office and we got them to the hospital, it was advanced, like the cancer had spread. And so, you know, these are the simple things that we don't think about, but that impact. So every African should know what the hepatitis B status is. Just like how we should all know our HIV status, we all need to know our hepatitis B status, because mostly it's Africans and Asians that are impacted by that. But how many Africans do you know that they need to ask their doctors to do a hepatitis B screening? Most people don't.
No, they don't.
You know, and so these are, and so, yeah, so most of the work that we do is really about awareness, education, and making sure people get tested so that they know their status. That's, I'm all about know your status, whether it's hepatitis, whether it's HIV, whether it's high blood pressure, whether it's diabetes, know what's going on in your body. And so most of our health work, it's focused on that. And so we touch on all the different health issues that impact our communities the most, like the high blood pressure, the diabetes, hepatitis B, HIV, prostate cancer for men. So we work with the hospitals to get free screenings for prostate cancer for the men in the community, because again, they don't know that this is something that is impacting them. By the time they find out, it's too late. So that's what we do. We work with most of the health centers too, in Philadelphia, that, you know, they give us clients who might not have insurance or have any money to pay, so they'll give our clients free services. But we do the education, the outreach, the awareness, the testing, the counseling, and then we link them to the health centers in Philadelphia. And then we have another program that is a health literacy program where we're teaching people how to talk to their doctors. Because, you know, again, we come from a society where we don't question our doctors. You know, you go to the doctor, whatever they tell you is what you, whatever they tell you, that's it. You know, we don't question our doctors. And so that particular program is set up to teach our clients three questions you need to ask your doctor. Before you leave your doctor's office, these are the three questions you need to know the answers to. Because again, we're trying to encourage people to talk to their providers so that they know what's really going on with them. And so we do a lot of that, especially with the older people. And then we know we have other human services we provide, like English classes and adult literacy classes and case management programs and helping people get access to benefits and different things like that. A whole spectrum of services that we provide. And now we're doing work with refugees who are coming to the city. We have a lot of refugees coming from the Congo now, Congolese refugees. So we're doing a lot of case management programs for them to sort of help them as they're trying to get adjusted to their new life here.
That is great work.
I know.
And a lot to do.
Yes. And there's a lot to do. Even though we're doing that, there's still a whole, that's a big gap in services that we need to address.
So do you think we need to have a bank of language for instance, you mentioned refugees from Congo who are coming. I mean, oh, you already have staff who speaks most of the languages you say, right?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have somebody. Most of the refugees coming speak Swahili, so we have a case manager that speaks Swahili.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah. It's difficult to serve people if you don't have the language.
Have the language.
Very
and you have up to 16 languages available.
Yep.
For your services. Wow.
Yeah. That's great. I know. It's important. You know, when clients come into the office and they can speak their language, it's very comforting for them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they feel like
comforting
home
for them. Yep. And they're able to open
up more.
So
when they go... When they go to the appointment for the back to office, for instance, you have an interpreter going with them as well.
Yeah, so that most of the time the case manager would take them to the appointment. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
wow.
Most times the case managers take them to their appointments to help them with the language issue. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned you have an empowering program. Oh, that's the outreach where you have your house parties and you provide information to women and, you know, sharing information.
Great. Yeah, that's that program.
Wow. It's been great to have you tonight. So, we have last comment, something that you wanted to make sure you touched. Oh, your phone number, your address.
Oh, yes. So, oh, boy, yes. We are located in West Philadelphia at 4415 Chestnut Street on the second floor. The phone number is 215-546-1232. Email is afao, A-F, like Frank, aho13@gmail.com. And our website is www.afaho.net.
Great.
Yes.
Do they need to have an appointment before they, do they need to call before or...
Have to have an appointment. No, you don't have to have an appointment. You can walk into the office. No appointment
Great.
Needed.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Because the office is open Monday to Friday.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Yeah. Great. We are very, very pleased to have you tonight. It's been a great show, all this great information. And we hope that your service continues to grow, to reach out to the more women, because women are really in need of information,
in need
of empowering, in need of health care, all these social services. This is great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank
and
you
And your stories
so
are really touching. And thanks for sharing these stories. It's passion.
There's a lot of stories and a lot that people are going through. Keep talking. Keep talking.
We hope to, you know, have you again in another show.
Yeah,
that would be fantastic. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
Okay.
And thank you again.
Thank you so much for coming. Thank you.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And thank you for our listener. And see you next Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time.
Yeah. Mhm.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Well, that's it for today's show. You've been listening to IDVAC Blog Talk Radio, right here every week at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. IDVAC Blog Talk Radio is brought to you by the Institute on Domestic Violence in the African American Community, in collaboration with the Women of Color Network and the African American Domestic Peace Project.
Visit us on the web at idvac.org to find out more information about our guests and presenters and to download podcasts of previous shows of IDVAC Blog Talk Radio. Until next week, be safe.